Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I welcome you and our viewers on Shaw Cable TV. My name is Dwayne Pendergast. I'm the moderator for today's session of the Southern Alberta Council on Public Affairs. I remind you there's a basket on your table to collect your $8 payment for lunch. Please assign an auditor to ensure the correct totals available. I would also like to thank SACPA's sponsors, the University of Lethbridge, the Lethbridge Herald, Shaw TV, Erickson's Restaurant, and all the volunteers for their support. And today I particularly appreciate the Herald's support. We had an editorial and an article in the paper this morning. Most of you know the procedure we follow. For the sake of new participants, and I noticed that there are some, I remind you that we will start with the presentation, then lunch will be served, and after lunch we'll have an opportunity for questions. Our topic today is making the most of Alberta's tar sands. Alberta government and industry have come a long way with the development of a one-time curiosity into a world-class resource. We hear much of the economic boom they are bringing to Alberta, as well as concerns with impact on the environment and social infrastructure. Cosmos Voutsinos, our speaker today, is an engineer, consultant, and entrepreneur. Cosmos came to Canada from Greece 42 years ago. He earned bachelor's and master's degrees in mechanical engineering from the University of Waterloo and McMaster University in Ontario. His career began with system design in the Canadian nuclear industry. He progressed to nuclear power plant construction management in Taiwan. Then he moved on to consulting with a focus on integrating all aspects of electricity supply. He sold his Taiwan company and came back to Canada to start another company designing and manufacturing control systems to operate in difficult environments such as nuclear reactors and outer space. He retired in 2002 and moved to Lethbridge. He has been thinking a lot about world energy needs and the tar sands. He has a vision to share with us. Please welcome Mr. Voutsinos.
Thank you, Dwayne. If you take a string and you fold it.
Okay.
If you take a string and you fold it twice, you end up with four strings. Now, if you twist it, you get a rope, and if you apply a force on that rope, you find out that the strength of that string is not four times the strength of one string, but five. That's coming because of the dynamic synergy with which the four strings are working together. Synergy is a very important factor.
You speak right into the mic. It's weak, so you speak right into it.
Okay. So, synergy is a very important factor. You can expand that concept to electronic board, where the strength of the overall board is much greater than the strength of the individual components, transistors, resistors, and so forth. That concept, you can expand it even further to human beings. For example, the higher the synergy of a hockey team is, the higher the strength of the team relative to the strength of the individual players. That concept can be expanded to cities, countries. Empires have been formed when they achieve a certain level of synergy. And the same empires have collapsed when some particular problem has caused the synergy to collapse. So this is a very important concept in our lives. And I was disturbed recently to realize that in Alberta, a province that is very heavily committed to energy, there was no such a thing as synergy in energy, no capability, no knowledge, not even intention to do anything about it. And that's what triggered this paper. As the information technology expands, I realize that the misinformation has been exploding in our lives, and we tend to debate things to death, but at the end we make decision a lot of the time on misinformation, and that's a problem we have to work out. So I wrote this paper, it's about 70 pages long, and time does not permit me to go into great detail, but I'll give you a little summary of the contents. If someone is interested, I'll give you a website to download it or an email to call and get access to it. So the first topic I'd like to sort of touch is the consumption of our energy. We do consume a lot of energy, and this consumption is increasing at enormous rates. For example, our electricity is met today by the equivalent of something like 20,000 huge power plants. And this demand in 50 years will be double, 40,000 power plants. The same thing applies to our oil consumption. Our oil consumption today is 80 million barrels a day, but the way we increase the consumption, it's doubling not in 50 years, but in 40 years. 260 million. Our gas, the same thing, we have some like 2.7 trillion cubic meters of gas, and this is doubling every 30 years. So you can sort of see the situation. We have an enormous acceleration, not only high numbers of consumption, but high acceleration rates. Another thing that you might be interested, the tar sands, the gas, should be depleted in about 30 years. Then it is becoming clear that our consumption and our lifestyle are heading a collision course with geology. I mean, nothing can last forever. And the first question to answer is why we have such a high and accelerating energy consumption? Is there a problem there? Is something we can do about it? What is it? Well, some people even go as far to give us a guilt feeling that we don't do enough to conserve energy. Yes, conservation is our responsibility, and it should be practiced whenever we can. But it is my opinion that you cannot solve that problem just by conservation or by attacking it with a better light bulb or by getting smaller cars. All this, what they will do, they will delay the day of reckoning, but it will not solve the problem. Even if we find a new oil find, if you notice the oil we have found lately are a certain size, and if we get some few oil finds, all we'll do is delay it by 10, 20 years, but nothing more. The problem still persists and is coming our way. I've given you a table, a list of all the countries with the oil, the reserves they have, and the rate at which it is consumed. All I did myself, divide the reserve by the rate of consumption to tell me how many years it was before that resource will be depleted. And that particular table sort of puts into perspective the enormous importance of the tar sands in the oil sea. Without the tar sands, 30 to 40 years, the world's oil should be lasting. And with the tar sands, about 80 to 100 years. That's just about it. So, what causes that high rate of consumption? First of all, a high energy consumption goes hand in hand with our standard of living, a first world country living, a lifestyle. You need energy to maintain that type of consumption. You see the garbage we produce, the boxes we throw away, that's all energy. We might be able to reduce a little bit, but then another problem kicks in. Our population is increasing, our age and longevity is increasing, and above all, we have the so-called third world countries that they aspire, deserve, and working towards achieving a first world country lifestyle. This alone puts an enormous pressure on our resources. For example, last year, China put 2 million new cars on the road. So no matter how much we conserve, no matter what we do, the day of reckoning will come, and sometime this century. And if we're not prepared, we're going to suffer. The problem is, people think that the oil companies will do it. It is not the responsibility of the oil companies to solve our problem. The oil companies have one job, and only one job. Invest, produce profit for the shareholders. They are not there, good Samaritans, to do other things. They might do some things, but that's not their job. If that's the case, then who is responsible to do the change over? Who is responsible to spearhead the change? So, no matter what we do, sometime this century we will have to change a type of fuel and a type of infrastructure. Now, that poses another problem. Visualize that if we change a fuel, we'll have to change 40,000 new power plants. 60 times the installations of the entire center will be 10 years from now. 1 million gas stations, 19,000 airlines will have to replace their fleet, billions of cars, millions of trucks, trains, engines, farm equipment, freighters, all industrial motors. How all these are going to be made? We will need energy. So what it has come up with? And all of this will need to have minerals to be mined or recycled, or materials transported, processed, and so forth. All of this will need energy. The only energy we have now is oil. So if I was an oilman, I would push an alternative form of energy because that will skyrocket my profits. And the oil companies will get the highest profits from the change of different structures. Time consideration. What would be the time to change? Some people, they say oil will last 20 years, 40 years, 100 years, and so forth. Well, we know that we'll have to have an enormous amount of resource to be depleted, to be spent to change our infrastructure. And we know that we have a resource for about 100 years. So if we try to change it at a very fast pace, the prices are going to hit the roof. You saw what happened in the tar sands with just a modest pressure on the construction has really gone out of control. So, if I'm going to summarize, we have an increasing dependence on a resource that we know will be depleting sometime this century. We know that in order to change that dependence, we need a lot of oil over and above to what we consume and accelerate. And we need to spend about 50 years, it's my estimate, to make the construction a bit more smooth rather than sort of pressure and get inflation and pressure in it. Then there is another thing we have to consider, that one third of our current oil consumption is spent for plastics, some 500,000 products, plastics, car, tires, fertilizers. After we change our infrastructure, still we will need those. Again, who is going to solve this problem? It is not the oil companies that can do this type of thing. So I thought as follows. At the tar sands, the main thrust of this paper is to capitalize on the strategic site, time, and location of the tar sands, and use them A, to provide the financing, and B, the energy we need to change our energy infrastructure. The tar sands need a lot of hydrocarbons. The bitumen is not oil. It's bitumen, it's something between coal and oil. It needs a lot of hydrogen to become oil. And the oil companies, they take that hydrogen out of gas and they enrich the bitumen to make it oil. This process is what emits a lot of CO2 into the atmosphere. Also, the tar sands need a lot of heat and electricity to power the industrial process. And here again, the oil companies are using gas with which they produce the energy they need, and again, they emit a lot of CO2 into the atmosphere. So, I look at all the possible forms of energy, and although everyone has a niche that can contribute, we're not chosen. We can't afford to be chosen. It's so desperate, the situation. We need them all. It's not this or that, it's all. But each one has a purpose. Coal or nuclear power plants can provide all the heat, the power that the tar sands need. And also, they can electrolyze water and produce the hydrogen without getting all the CO2 emissions. The reason that the oil companies don't do that is because they don't pay the full value of the gas they consume, and that is something that our government is aware of it. If I was going to compare nuclear versus coal, the next table I put on the page, I believe 13 it is, it shows the relative cost per kilowatt hour of the various power plants. You will see the relative type of thing. The nuclear is cheaper than coal, and the coal is a worse polluter. Now, there is a way that coal can control the CO2 by sequestering into rocks, but there are hundreds of thousands of plants in the world, and small plants that burn coal, none of them has introduced the technology because simply it's very expensive. So we have an already more expensive process, plus we'll need to add an expensive additional process to save the CO2. Then finally, but not lastly, the coal fire plants require still the burning of oil to use the bulldozers to mine the coal and transport it. So nuclear plant seems to be the best choice, except for one problem. It is swimming in misinformation, misunderstanding, and both of which have created in the mind of the public a nuclear allergy. The written report I have put clarifies this concept. I'm not going to go any further now. If someone is interested, I can go back in the second part of the period. So the success of the model presented depends on the government's ability to convince and entice the oil industry. You don't want to lead them, but you want to entice them to spearhead the change. At the beginning, it will not be easy. They are a very conservative organization. They know what they want to do, and they do it. But they will be difficult to change the mentality. But at the end, they will see the light that there is profit to be made there, and that alone should make them follow. The oil companies will increase production and profits from hydrocarbons for at least 50 years, in addition to what they forecast right now. They will continue indefinitely about half of today's production for the plastics industry. Dow had closed several plants because they could not get feed of gas. The oil companies would be establishing a control over a new market for the new fuel that could last about 3,000 years until uranium is depleted. And also they would be able to produce and ship from the same assets up in the tar sands hydrogen as well as hydrocarbons. So it should be a very attractive, and it's not be very difficult once you catch their attention to convince them. It is just a matter of a good leader and a good approach to it. I prefer the oil companies to do it because they have the size, the capacity, the technical, the financial strength to do a timely, good job. And they can see, all it is to make them to see the big picture, and then they will appreciate. So, to conclude then, if the government is going to do it, the government of Alberta is called to make choices that will depend on the courage to practice long-term thinking and to make bold, courageous, anticipatory decisions before problems have reached crisis proportion. All the recent leases that have been issued on the basis of old policies include the right of the capital provision, even if only 30% of the capital that the oil companies spend is spent in Alberta. It's only 30% of the capital. You might think that if they spend $100 billion, they will get all handy here. It's not so. It's only 30 billion. Equipment are made elsewhere. Interest on the money are spent elsewhere. The low price paid by the oil companies also for the consumption of natural gas in situ, that's another powerful incentive that the government has. The consideration of the extra profit from the consumption of gas in situ, like if they make a profit for burning the gas at low price, they should declare it when it's going to be calculating to pay off the capital, to write off the capital before they start paying royalties. And then the last leases, they have no request for the oil company to burn syngas for power. Syngas is a byproduct of the production of the tar sands, and it can be burned without emissions of CO2. And the oil companies have developed this technique and keep it as a backup if things get too hot in the environmental front. I would expect that the government should honor all existing agreements. However, it could tweak taxes, it could tweak incentives, and give the auto industry new incentives in line with our own long-term goal. The first step will be to evaluate the merits of this report, adjust as necessary, and announce a policy that Alberta will use the financial and energy benefits from the tar sands to launch in the hydrogen era now, which will start becoming effective 20 years from now. Then we will have to negotiate with the oil industry to ensure that they will be switching to burn syngas instead of natural gas as soon as possible and continue for the next 20 years as nuclear plants start coming in and take over the load of heat, electricity and production of hydrogen. They can continue producing this syngas because there are chemical industries that desperately need it for fertilizer. I mentioned before, Dow has closed 3 plants already. They don't have feed of the gas. This action alone will bring Canada quite close to the Kyoto, not quite to satisfy, but quite closer than where we are right now. And it will do it with happy oil companies. Then the government will have to negotiate with the nuclear industry for a series of current generation reactors, nuclear reactors, and it tells them to produce the electricity, heat, and all the hydrogen the oil companies need. At the same time, though, they have to signal to the nuclear industry to put its act together and start producing the next generation of nuclear reactors that they don't produce radioactive waste. And they know what it is. Not only that, but they burn the waste that the current nuclear reactors are producing. And we will not have the 10,000 year radioactive waste sitting around. The government will have to attempt to honor all the past agreements. Will have to, because that's the only way to ensure the cooperation of the oil industry. They will have to restructure the AUB to have a diverse energy expertise and a new mandate to license alternative forms of energy. They will have to license as much wind power as possible to produce hydrogen in a direct conversion and pipe this hydrogen up to tar sands for the initial stage. Then also they will have to license as much as biodiesel as possible for the public utilities as a peak load or standby load plants. That's where this plant is best suited. In about 20 years, the oil industry could be producing 5 million barrels per day up in the tar sands. Now they produce about 1. And they will have all the hydrogen that they need. And at that point, they will be building the first generation of nuclear reactor, next generation of nuclear reactor prototype to burn all the currently produced spent fuel. The excess hydrogen they will have that they will not need can start being shipped to the markets through the existing pipelines. Maybe a little modification of liner, but that's all that will be needed, and the existing pipelines can ship it. They will keep increasing the construction of new generation nuclear plants and keep increasing the production and supply of hydrogen in the market. The earlier announcement that we'll be doing in the next year or two will place the problem where it belongs to the consumption industry. Car companies, gas stations will position, scrabble for position to get a piece of that new market. Are the nuclear plants profitable? Then the government can make them back available to the oil companies as profitable assets and thereby recover its capital investment. It will take about, in my estimation, about 50 years for the consumption infrastructure to change. By then, the oil companies will have a new fuel to ship, as well as a lot of hydrocarbons to the plastics industry. The Alberta government not only will accomplish to meet the Kyoto agreements by that time with happy oil companies, but also will make a major contribution not only to our country, but to the world. And they will ensure a robust economy for Alberta companies for the next 3,000 years. To end where I started, when you make a rope, you need the core string around which you wrap the rest of them. So what I'm asking for the government is to provide that core string and give the incentive to form a rope and to work in synergy with the string of the tar sands, the string of the oil companies, the nuclear industry string, the wind power string, biofuels, and the environmentalists, to remind us to work in harmony with our nature. I believe that such a rope will develop the strength required to carry humanity in its destiny. Thank you.